I'm thrilled to say that this series of Beyond the Bathroom is sponsored by Skin & Me, the subscription skincare service tailored to provide what your skin needs. Make sure to keep listening for a discount code you won't want to miss. That's for later in the episode. Now on with the show. Hiya, I'm Sally Hughes and this is Beyond the Bathroom, where each week I chat to my guests about their relationship with their own appearance. In Beyond the Bathroom, I'll be getting under the skin of my guests' beauty routines and rituals and finding out exactly what they see when they look in the mirror. How has their past affected the way they see themselves now? When do they look their best? And which bold new look disasters would they rather forget? This week's guest is Sabrina Elba, pageant queen and model turned entrepreneur, environmental activist, and UN Goodwill Ambassador. During the COVID pandemic, she and her husband, actor Idris Elba, grew a large online community of mutually supportive lockdowners, set about developing their own skincare brand, Sable Labs, more of that later, I promise, and began Coupledom, their own hugely popular podcast exploring the secrets of successful partnerships. Romantic, familial, and professional. But today I'm interested in a different kind of relationship, the one Sabrina has with her own appearance. How does it feel to live in her skin? Let's find out. Sabrina, welcome to Beyond the Bathroom. I'm delighted to see you again. Huge congratulations on the launch of Sable Labs. And we are going to talk lots about that, I know. But let's give your whole route into beauty some context. So, Miss Vancouver 2014. Oh, how did that come about? Did you do a lot of that kind of thing? Was it a fluke? Did it mean you went on to compete in Miss Canada? Like, tell me how that came about.
You know, it's one of those things you kind of wish would just get buried somewhere. But actually, I think still today, if I go missing, it'll be former beauty pageant queen.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, but I actually, so my sister was in and out of a children's hospital a lot when she was younger. So she's got an autoimmune disorder that she still fights with today. And I found out that this pageant had been donating quite a bit of money to the hospital. And initially I signed on to sort of go door to door and raise money for the hospital. And then they were like, you should enter. So I really did not want to get into pageantry, but because I'm a tall girl and I grew up quite thin, everyone was like, oh, you should be a model. Oh, you should be a model. So I kind of, you know, you hear your aunts and people say that to you all the time, family and friends. So I thought, okay, you know what? I'm just going to enter this pageant. Either way, I get to raise money for the hospital. It'll be fun. And I did. I really didn't expect to win, but that was the end of it. I did not want to go forward. I definitely didn't want to do Miss Canada. You kind of get entered into like the Miss World route. But I was like, no, I'm over it. So I did it just for that. And I felt really fulfilled. And it was actually one of the things that probably opened up the philanthropic world for me. And I never forgot the feeling of being able to take that check to the children's hospital. And we had the picture framed in my house for a while where I'm just showing up with this big check. And it felt so good. And it wasn't much. It was like $5,000 Canadian, but it felt really good that I'd worked and raised that money. And, you know, and it was probably part of my life that shaped who I am, even though I make fun of it and talk it down a bit. It was pretty important for my younger years.
And had you always had confidence in your appearance, or was it just something that other people told you?
Definitely not. So I had what I'm calling and people call tall poppy syndrome, where I was always the tallest girl in the class. So I always tried to kind of cower a bit, sort of like my posture still suffers from this thing. But I didn't want to stand out. I was so cripplingly shy when I was younger. So I hated it. I mean, I needed braces. You know, my hair was curly. I was the only black girl in the school. So I felt like I just looked so different. And I wasn't necessarily confident at all. Probably about 25 was when I started to see myself differently. And it's not even that long ago, which is funny. Like, I think 10 years ago, like, is when I started to blossom. But I grew up so shy, even though people and family would tell me, oh, you're such a tall, pretty girl. I'd be like, no, don't look at me. And I think it just came from being different, just being the different one in my class. I was very curvy, even though I was very skinny, and everyone, you know, boys would tease me for that before it was as hugely popular as it is now to have a curvy bottom. I kind of trailblazed there. It's funny because I joke about it with my friends. It went from everyone saying, oh, you've got like a fat bottom, to now, oh, she's got a fake bottom. Like, she must have
many people pump their bums up with other things.
Exactly.
Fat transfer and things.
Which I think is so funny. But no, I was definitely very shy.
And your mother, I'm interested in your mother because so many of us saw beauty or some perception of it or practices of it through our mothers and our grandmothers.
Oh, yeah.
She raised 5 kids by herself, right?
Single mother, 5 children. I know my father passed away when I was 12. Mm-hmm. She remarried. She was in an abusive relationship, but she had thankfully, like my three younger siblings, who I love. I don't consider them half siblings. They're the best part of those years of our lives. And, you know, she did it all alone. And she had beauty regimens and traditions that were more cultural. She was never like a nine product person. She just sort of brought culture down from things that my grandma had taught her, things that she'd learned growing up. One of those things was a ghusl mask, which Somali women swear by, Sally, and wear literally every day.
Like, okay, tell me what that is.
It comes from the gob tree. And it's a natural soap, but it's got really great antioxidant properties. And it also really helps with giving like a glow to the skin. It's anti-inflammatory as well. So they wear it like every day. They'll just mix it with like goat's milk powder and turmeric.
As like a morning routine.
As a day through routine. Because generally the culture with Somali women is they stay at home while the men are at work. So they'd be doing their daily errands with this mask on their face. So I kid you not, my mom would be like cooking, vacuuming,
wow,
with a mask on her face.
Multitasking.
Every day.
Beauty as she goes.
Absolutely. And it's quite funny because I've definitely picked out quite a few of her habits, but she'd always say, use a hot towel on your face every day. Like, she's like, don't use too much stuff. You know, try and get products that just all you need, like just the minimum of what you need, because they're selling you chemicals. Like, she'd always say, they're selling you chemicals. She believed in using lots of natural ingredients and to, you know, adhere to her customs and traditions.
And how, I'm interested in that generally, because it sounds like you've been really influenced by her beauty rituals and practices. I wonder, has your Somali heritage influenced your relationship with your appearance and your relationship with beauty generally, I guess?
Yeah, definitely in some ways. I mean, there are some traditions that feel a bit, what's the right way to put this? I think it applies pressure to younger Somali girls. For instance, in the Somali tradition, having your hair really nice and long and healthy is almost a bit of a pressure. It's like, oh, why don't you take care of your hair? Why don't you take... So it tends to become a bit cumbersome when you're younger, thinking, oh gosh, I have to like mask my hair and my face every day. But then you also realize, okay, but learning taking care of yourself at a young age isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just about moderating and figuring out what works for you and how you feel most confident. So there's traditions that I've carried, but I do try not to be... or not to apply so much pressure on myself as some cultures can do. I mean, you know, having fair skin, staying out of the sun too much, and all these things that come wrapped up in culture and tradition, trying to separate that from what actually works for me.
It's so interesting hearing you talk about beauty for you culturally, and I think for so many of us, of beauty being such a gendered thing, right? The way women have to look after themselves.
Absolutely.
Is so much more high maintenance, is so much more complex, the pressures and so on, sometimes specific to a culture, but I think it's also the condition of being a woman, right?
Absolutely.
And so it's interesting to me that your skincare brand is genderless.
Yeah.
And I wonder what the journey was like for you between that being your upbringing and deciding, do you know what, we're all going to do the same thing.
Funny enough, it probably didn't start that journey until I was married, because for me, it had been more of a gendered thing. My brothers were so young at the time when I was going through my beauty coming of age, let's call it. So for them, we didn't really get to talk about product together. Now, my 20-year-old brother knows so much more than I do.
Yeah.
And is like a Sephora junkie.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's a straight young man and he's fully cognizant of any new skincare brand saying, you know, well, that's actually unethical and this and... But my education through For Sable, the brand that we started, actually probably leans into Idris's educating himself during lockdown and us having to share product. And then me explaining to him, no, yeah, you can use that. You've got skin too. No, it's fine. And then thinking, wait, why don't you know that? Why do you think that yours has to be like peppermint and invigorating and
right,
energizing? And then watching him and his face kind of get like offended. Going, wait, so we've been lied to? Like, I can use all these things? And I'm like, yes, you can. He's like, well, we care about climate. We care about why is nothing marketed to us? And I said, that's a very good question, Idris. So it was actually, he probably opened that up for me in a very matter of a fact way. Like, it's not like we were, you know, trying to venture off into genderless skincare. It just made sense. Like, it should be. All skincare should be genderless. There shouldn't be a pink tax. There shouldn't be marketing ploys and all this stuff, which I'm learning now, but I can say that genuinely 5 years ago, I probably would have been, like most consumers, a bit unaware that men had these struggles and were facing sort of this big, dark, looming cloud of like, what is that world? And why is it so marketed this way to us? Or, you know?
And I just don't think men care about that stuff anymore. You know, you were saying about your brother, none of the men I know care if their face cream looks too feminine. Like, they just want their skin to look nice.
Exactly.
As you were saying about Idris.
It's so funny, isn't it? I think there's a definite misconception that men's product needs to be dumbed down. But I think men actually just want good stuff. They don't, you know, it's actually the opposite. I think now we're seeing more and more having the brand out, actually having men buy into it, and us going, okay, well, people told us when we started, you're not going to re-educate men. Don't try. Sell to women. Don't sell to men. And then us seeing men pick up, you know, their phones and whatever and buy our products, and me going, actually, they care that they just want stuff that works.
Yes.
What they don't care about is all this other marketing ploys and all that stuff that just dumbs it down or alienates them or has to have it like super masculine, because I think most men kind of think that's off-putting as well. No?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That sort of toxic masculinity, yeah. That very macho thing.
Yeah,
it's just not totally. A vibe, is it? You are the CEO of Sable. This is not a collaboration. This is your brand, mm-hmm. and you co-founded it with your husband. And so consequently, we are talking about a Black-owned brand.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering how your experience, I suppose first as a Black model and now as a Black owner of a brand, has it changed or affected your view of the way people of colour are perceived and served by the beauty industry? Are you noticing more? Has it become more complicated? Tell me about that journey for you.
I would say that the journey wasn't one that was linear, per se. There was a time as a consumer where I was so unaware of my specific skincare needs as someone with more melanated skin that I bought into things so much more readily without completely understanding it, whether or not it was good for me.
Right.
And then that education came with time, sort of, you know, just Googling, why is my skin doing this? Why are my scars lasting 6-7 months when I get one spot, you know, and just self-education, because I found actually I didn't know who to talk to. I'd ask my friends and then they wouldn't know either. And I'm looking at products on the shelves and thinking, okay, so I see that, you know, when you go into, for instance, at my age, I was going to like a Target, which is sort of like a big American, you know, sort of department store. And I'd see all of the sort of more melanated products or products targeted towards people with melanated skin in kind of like a different aisle and a different section. And it would be, okay, so all the Shea stuff over here. And then I'd go and I'd see all the beautiful branding and packaging of these luxe brands that I wanted to buy into. And I didn't, there felt like there was a gap. And very much there is so, because there are certain, you know, skin problems that come with having more melanated skin, which you would know, like hyperpigmentation,
yeah.
and what happens when our skin gets inflamed, that actually affects everyone. It affects us maybe to a higher degree, but it's not hard to incorporate these issues into everyone's skincare because everyone benefits from them.
Right.
So then it started to become this feeling of, well, that feels unfair. And actually, when we started out the brand, having those conversations with Idris, him going, well, why do you need that and this and all these things? And I'm like, okay, well, I have this issue and that, and this is the only brand I know. Like, for instance, I was using Barbra Streisand's brand, which I do love and has a dark skin tones line.
Yeah.
So, well, why does it have to be a line? And I was like, I don't know.
Who doesn't need niacinamide, right?
Exactly.
Let's all have it.
Exactly. So, you know, it was definitely this kind of journey of feeling like left out by the industry,
yeah.
and then deciding, okay, actually, no, if you want to champion something or change something, you need to get into the industry and not sort of step away or feel different. So what we didn't want to do was create something that further segmented people. We wanted something that was further inclusive. So actually, let's just address more concerns and let's do more and let's make formulations that do more, which actually is better for the planet because you're not buying single formulation things or single ingredient things like a hyaluronic acid, for instance. Let's create things that have lots of impact and address lots of people's concerns. And also people said to us early on, don't sell to everyone. And I was like, well, we're not trying to sell to anyone, everyone. We're trying to sell to people who care.
Yeah.
And I think there's actually a great deal amount of people who care.
Yeah. Yeah. We park our cars in the same garage on all of that stuff, nice. I think. I don't like single ingredient. No, I'm just not into it.
I was talking about that earlier with a friend. There was a time when we'd be sort of mixing, and I'm guilty to say, with brands like, which I also love The Ordinary because of the making things more accessible price point wise.
But transparent and democratic. And absolutely. Yeah.
I would be putting things on my skin that I probably shouldn't be putting on my skin at right. higher doses than I should be. So then I started to get really scared of actives. I was like, well, actives aren't for me. And then I realized, well, actually, it's just about combining them with things that, you know, soften the effects. Like we put licorice root in our moisturizer because we want it to be calming, but it also has really great, you know, ways of combating hyperpigmentation. So it's just about sort of finding that right balance, which is something that we were so passionate about. It's like, how do we make something that has all the actives we want, but isn't scary to our skin.
There is one aspect. When I watched so much footage of you and listened to podcasts and all sorts of things in the run-up to this conversation. And one thing that really struck me about you is that you're a very feminine person. Like, you love your makeup. Can we talk about Charlotte Tilbury doing your wedding makeup, please?
Oh my God.
So how did that come about? How was the experience? Did you love it so much? Because you did look so beautiful.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I felt really beautiful, which I think every girl wants to feel like that, right, on their wedding day. So I was so thankful and so humbled, by the way. Like, the Charlotte Tilbury was doing my wedding makeup. I stood in line at Holt Renfrew in Canada because her brand was launching there in,
right,
Vancouver.
Okay.
Because she was there. And I was like, going to meet her. And then I missed when she'd left because she didn't stay the whole day. And I was like, oh, I didn't get to meet her. So to me, it was like this weird, the universe was telling me something. She's doing my wedding makeup. And it actually came about because Edward was doing a cover for us around the wedding.
So you're talking about Edward Denningfull at Vogue, right?
That's right. At British Vogue. And he said, who's doing your makeup? Who's doing your wedding makeup? And I was like, oh, probably my friend, who is actually my makeup artist. And he said, have you ever worked for Charlotte? And I said, no, but that's a dream. He's like, she's a good friend of mine. She should totally do your makeup for the wedding and she can work on the cover as well. And I thought, yeah. And I cannot tell you.
No, it's all right. I'm good.
I cannot tell you this woman. I was so nervous because, like, Vogue is there, the family is there. And she just sat right in between my legs, was like, listen, you're okay. You're going to look beautiful. You're going to look fabulous, darling. I think is exactly what she said. And I just went, okay, I am going to look fabulous. Thank you very much, Charlotte.
She's very good in those situations, Charlotte.
She is.
She's quite a woman's woman.
She is, Charlotte,
and she has that way with other women.
I can't tell you how much she supported our brand when we started out. She recommended all of the agencies we pretty much ended up working with, the 3PLs, all our consultants. Like, she's such a girl's girl. She was like, I'm going to help you guys win. Here's my contact book. What do you need? And she's been a good friend ever since. Like, I love her to bits.
So Charlotte Tilbury doing your wedding makeup in Marrakesh is obviously indisputably a beauty high point. I'm going to make you talk about some beauty low points. Yeah, come on, give me your stinkers.
Oh gosh, I've got a few. You know, when I started dating Idris, you kind of get thrown into this world of, okay, is she a model? Is she an actor? What does she do? Why is she on, like, and you kind of get this intense pressure to look to a certain standard or dress. And at that time I was like, I'm not spending this much to go to a 5-minute carpet with you. Like, that's ridiculous. And I realized very quickly there's some things that you just can't do on a budget. And one of those things was wigs. I was very adamant that I was not going to damage my hair. I was going to wear wigs. My friends were starting to wear them. And I cannot tell you, when I look back at some of my pictures, I'm like, why is there a pillowcase on my head? Because I was trying to do it myself too.
Okay.
Oh, it's so. And my sister would like send me messages, what is that on your head? And I'm like, I'm trying a new wig. And she's like, no. But it's like this weird, like, I didn't know who to talk to. I'd never done it before. I was being resistant to, like, working with certain people that were of a certain caliber. So I was like, a bit of imposter syndrome. Why do I need to work with these people? So wigs was my battle, and now I don't do them anymore, and I feel all the better for it. I would just say I'm not a wig person. I've tried a couple times since then, but...
It hit me with your worst wig. What was the worst wig?
Oh, man. I would say the worst one was the Berlin Film Festival with Idris. And by the way, we're going to this film festival and I'm thinking, oh, it's just like an indoor reception. Oh, great. But sometimes when you see a picture of someone on a step and repeat or a red carpet, it's a little out of context. What you don't see is the rest of the room.
Yeah.
Everyone else is dressed very casual. So maybe it is good sometimes to, like, be the most dressed up person, but sometimes you just want to go with the casual moment. So I'm, like, dressed very casual in, like, an ASOS dress and like a Zara jacket. And I'm, like, wearing this, like, wig and my fringe, because the wig had pulled back. The fringe kind of went a bit too high.
A slightly too short fringe is a very unique horror, isn't it? We've all had one.
Yes. And it could be trendy, maybe, you know, someday. I saw Beyonce do, like, once a short cut fringe, and I thought maybe people will think I was just going for that. But no, I was not intending to have that shorter fringe that night.
Have you worked out what works for you in terms of your makeup? What would you say is your signature look?
I would say skin is always, I'm happy to leave the house any which way as long as I feel like I feel dewy and refreshed and I don't feel dull or dry. Like, the skincare before my makeup is such an important step for me, because that's really what's most important to me, because I I get frustrated if I feel I look really dry, especially moving to London where I do feel my skin is a lot more dry.
Right.
But it's also my lash extensions. I've had lash extensions for 10 years. I don't know what I look like without them. I don't want to know what I look like without them. And during COVID, my girlfriend who was living with us at the time and was like, could do them, was like, I know.
What about now?
Lucky. I know, because people were like, oh, but then didn't you stop? And I was like, no, I haven't stopped. I've gone straight through. And I'm sure that they're doing okay, because people always are like, do you have any lashes left? I'm like, well, there's got to be something.
Because they're gripped onto something.
They're gripped onto something. But that's definitely like my staple. If I have my lashes and I've got my skincare feeling good and my makeup sitting really good on top of my skincare, I feel very good. And then with that, it's like bushy brows, which I love. So I'm all
about. You do have a good brow, I must say.
But you know what? I'm all about the brow gels.
Yes.
Like the Anastasia little pot right now, the gel is my favorite thing. Refi's I really like. Is that how you say it?
Refi's is very good.
Yes, so good. And then I'm guilty pleasure because they sent me some and I was very excited about that. I always worried, like, you know, starting a brand, does that mean brands aren't going to send you anything anymore?
Do you
worry about that?
No.
You still get sent everything.
I still get sent everything. Do you like a kind of fluffy bushy brow?
I do. So that's always my aim.
Okay, let me tell you, because from one fluffy, bushy brow girl to another. The Authored one is so good.
I haven't even heard of that.
Okay, it's a brand called Authored, and it's by Tanya Burr, who's like an online content creator. And I was not expecting the brand to be amazing, but that brow gel, oh my goodness, it is so, so, so good. And they sent me everything. They keep offering to send me more, but I have actually bought it twice. I love it so much.
I love that. Is it sold in the UK?
Yes.
I'll find it.
I'm going to get it to you. Don't worry. I think you'll like it.
I've got such a mission when I hear there's a good product. I will find it. It probably after our
meeting. It makes your brows stand up on end, but not in like that kind of hard, crusty way. You know, like in a fluffy.
Love that. I just love that fluffy look. It's so, I think it frames someone's face so much when they have a good brow. Like your brows are
so
such a huge part of your face and your aesthetic. And like, I abused them so much when I was younger. I was definitely a brow tweezer, you know, and overplucked and all that stuff. And I had very thin 90s brows, which I regret.
We're lucky that they grew back, right? Because they often don't grow back.
But never to how they were. I mean, I used to have a unibrow, believe it or not, when I was a kid.
Like Frida Kahlo vibe.
Yeah, I did. Fully. Now I'm like, what happened? Because I almost wouldn't mind if it was still there.
I mean, I'm sorry, Sabrina. I think you're doing all right face-wise. I wouldn't stress too much about it. Skin and Me, our brilliant sponsor here on Beyond the Bathroom, is a subscription skincare service tailored to provide exactly what your skin needs. I can vouch personally for both the service and the treatment because I myself have been a paying Skin and Me subscriber for almost 2 years and I wouldn't be without it. It's a personalised service that's tailored for your skin. Skin and Me treats conditions like acne, rosacea and hyperpigmentation, plus it works on more general skin goals like my own. Greater glow, smoother texture, softer fine lines and wrinkles and more. Each month you'll receive a personalised dermatologist-designed solution packed with powerful, scientifically proven active ingredients you can't buy over the counter. Delivered in a recyclable dispenser called the Daily Doser that you twist and click each night to deliver just the right amount of cream required for a nightly application, making sure that you get the correct dose that won't damage your skin barrier. Because Skin and Me are so confident that you'll love it as much as I do, they're offering all Beyond the Bathroom listeners the opportunity to trial their first month of Skin and Me for just £3.50 instead of at the regular cost of £24.99. That includes all the check-ins you want or need, plus reformulations and advice on tap. Skin and Me want happy, healthy skin for everyone. No dermatologist wait lists required. Just use the code SALIHUGHES, SALIHUGHES, at checkout at skinandme.com to redeem the offer. That's SALIHUGHES at skinandme.com. Because I'm asking everybody, and I do think this is very important in women's lives, like, what is your Skin and Me moment? So what is your moment in the day where you just have for you, where you're kind of in flow or in peace? Like, what does that look like for you, a mask?
Yeah, I'm an intense masker because I'll do the foot mask and I'll do the face mask and I'll do the hair mask. And I sit with my funny little shower cappy thing and my feet up on the table outside on our porch with my cup of tea and a book, and I'm masked out and I pray that Idris doesn't walk in because I look quite scary, frankly, but I just love masking. And thinking about it from the beginning of our conversation, of course, I picked it up from my mom.
Right. Yes. Because she was such a devout masker.
Yeah. And that for her was her like me thing. So I've obviously subconsciously taken that to an extreme. But at least I only do it for like half an hour, whereas she was doing it for the whole day.
And are you a person who always has a book on? Has a book on the go?
Yeah. I love books. I just love books. I think for me, if I'm going to have a me moment, I find it hard to just sit and like do nothing. Like I get really envious of people who meditate, but books are my form of meditation because I get lost in them. You know, we call it a me moment, but for me, community is such a huge part of my mental wellness. And talking to my siblings, who I miss so much, I have two brothers, two sisters, devoutly miss them. Talking to them for an hour is a me moment. As much as it's a them moment, I feel so much better after I've had a conversation with them and caught up, or with my mom. And I wish they lived here. But I think sometimes we need to look at self-care as sort of like a selfless thing as well. Sometimes it is about the people around us.
Yeah.
And it's part of the reason that we started Coupled on the podcast, because we realize partnerships are such an important part of our lives. And I realized that the most during lockdown.
I totally agree. I'm interested in what you just said about that, because I feel the same way. My me moment is very often just being with my girlfriends. That's the thing that makes me feel as though the world is the right way up again, you know, that things are good. And so tell me about your girlfriends. Are relationships with other women very important to you?
Absolutely. So Vancouver, Canada is actually a small town in comparison to London. I didn't realize that before I moved here. So my high school friends, like there's like 15 of us. We're still very much good friends. We all have our bachelorettes together and and it's funny because we are literally like the UN when you look at us, which is very much made up of the Vancouver diaspora. Like it's a blend of everything and every culture and every religion and every, you know, language. And I love that. And I love my group of friends. Five of them live in London. So lucky me now, because
God, that's great.
I know. One moved before me and then I moved. The other was already like part British. She's moved. And then the rest of them I kind of like dragged along.
That's some good numbers.
I think I can slowly drag more.
Yeah.
I'm convincing them.
This isn't over yet, I don't think.
I don't think so. So I'm so close with my girlfriends. Like, and I've made friends in the UK, but it was actually really hard for me to make friends at first. I think Canadians are very loud and outgoing, and that can sometimes be a bit off-putting to British people.
Oh, I'm surprised to hear that, because Canadians are incredibly polite and British people are polite. And so that's something that is different from lots of other cultures,
absolutely.
Lots of other countries. There's an extreme politeness and an ability to queue.
Absolutely. An ability to queue. I love that. I'm going to use that. But I do think, at least the British experience I've had, people already have their close circles and their close friends. And they cherish those relationships so much. It was kind of hard to break in and be like the new friend in a serious way and develop relationships that were more meaningful than surface. So I found that hard at first. And now I have like a group of friends here that I absolutely adore and love. But for a while, like I needed my girlfriends to move to London. I was like, you guys, you need to come out here. And I'm so happy that they did come, because we still do our weekends away together. One of them lives with us from time to time. My friends come as part
God,
of the
God, I'm so pleased for you, because I couldn't cope with not having my friends if I moved to another country. That would be a huge thing for me. You're married to an extremely famous man. When that relationship began, and now when it's in such a good place, you're married, you run this business together. Tell me how it is in maintaining your sense of identity as a person in your own right.
You know, that's a really interesting one for me, because if I was looking outward in, it would have been very hard to maintain that sense of identity, because you're reading things that ignore your identity almost completely.
Right.
So I had to just shut all that out. And as long as I was doing things that I was passionate about and I felt were moving the needle for me, I didn't feel like I lost my sense of identity. And plus, I'm married to a man who is so supportive, like almost disgustingly so. Like, I'm like, why are you too good to be true? You can't be a sexy man and then also be this great a person. Like, what did I do in life to get you? But he's been so great in sort of ushering my passions and my opinion matters so much in our household that I didn't really have to suffer maybe that issue as much.
So you have a big voice in your home.
I do, yeah. And I think also that's another cultural tradition, is women generally in Somali communities speak up quite a lot in the house. Like, it is very much the woman's house. And I probably subconsciously took that with me as well, because I very much choose all of the colors on the walls. You know? But I also think, like, that's part of just my personality. I don't know if it's a Gemini thing. It's a control thing. I love my setting. My home is such a part of like my thing and how I feel.
Yeah.
I have to have such a big say in it.
It's everything, isn't it?
It's everything.
Your home is everything.
The cushions matter. And I tell Idris, I'm like, the cushions matter.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. What's your routine? So your lashes are done, what, every few weeks or whatever?
Yep.
What's your skin routine? Talk me through it.
So I do once a month facials, and I live in Notting Hill. I found this cute, cute little, I have to learn to say Notting Hill because people think I'm saying Nottingham.
You're Canadian. You can say it in a Canadian accent. It's allowed.
Called Koya, so K-O-I-A. And mm-hmm. There's a facialist there by the name of Abby. She's like my best friend now.
Oh, wow.
I'm never leaving Abby. And she just will sit and look at me and go, you've been flying a lot. You are very dry. Or, you know, this is what you need. No, you don't do anything. Let's just have a quick wash and moisturize. And she's been so great. And she's definitely become a huge part of my, not only beauty routine, but my self-care routine, because it's that hour that I get with her. And I can just like, girl, talk about my skin and let loose. She's almost a therapist in a way. So
it's a very intimate relationship. When someone's touching your face and seeing it naked, that's a very intimate moment, right?
Absolutely. So she's a huge part of my routine. But I also like, you know, now that you have your own brand, you tend to use your own stuff. So I've pared down on so much things. Like for me, it's so much more about using less and just trying to take care of my skin barrier. I was slugging for a bit before I started the brand, but now I feel like we've put enough emollients in our stuff that I don't feel I need to do that as much, and I still can protect my skin. Sunscreen is a huge part of everything. And, you know, we want to develop a sunscreen, but God, it is hard to develop something that isn't harmful because you realize behind the curtain how much goes into those products.
What fragrance do you wear?
Okay, so I am torn between a couple things. I love Killian Good Girl Gone Bad. Mm-hmm. I love anything with like a powdery, baby powdery kind of start to it or something.
So like a bit kind of old movie star's dressing room.
Absolutely.
That kind of dusty, feminine. Yeah.
Absolutely. I love, love, love that. And I think Killian does that very well. But I also love Maison Francis Kirk de Jean, which most people do Baccarat, but I love the Aloe Rose.
Uh-huh. That's a beautiful one.
I think so too. So I'm kind of torn between those two, but I love trying new fragrance. I'm not a person that goes, that has to be my fragrance forever. If somebody sends me a fragrance, I'll fully try it for like a month, a week, whatever, unless someone tells me, oh, you don't smell that good. Or if I'm like, I need to be able to smell my fragrance throughout the day.
Me too.
Yeah.
Nothing worse than going, where did that go at like 2 p.m.?
But do you think, and tell me if I'm crazy here, if you wear one fragrance always, you get nose blind to it?
Yes, I think That's definitely true. But also to me, I have fragrances that I've had my entire life and have worn my entire life, but not every day or even every week or every month. Like, that bores me.
Yeah.
I want to feel, you kind of wake up and decide, who do I want to be today, don't you?
Absolutely.
Who am I seeing? How do I want to come across? Am I like a badass CEO of a skincare brand, or am I hanging out with my girls?
Yeah. There's this brand called Sniff that started out of the mm-hmm. States? And I love this kind of democratization of skincare that they've done, where it's kind of like, if you don't like it, send it back. You know, try it out, mix and match, all this, and it's a really great price point because I don't think fragrance needs to cost as much as it does. And I'm starting to try and learn new brands like that. I bought a bunch of their candles that I'm obsessed with.
Love a candle. Do you love a candle?
I love a candle. Another funny thing in Somali culture, which I actually think is quite Middle Eastern as well, they'll use incense as body fragrance. So what they'll do is they'll light some incense, stand over it, or put it in the closet. So their clothes smell of incense. So for me, candles are like that thing for me. I need them near my closet, obviously not too close because you know what can happen with a candle near clothes, but close enough so that my room and all my stuff smells like it. And that makes me feel better. Like, oh, everything's fragranced.
Yeah. It's about kind of having that beautiful moment wherever you can snatch it, right?
Yeah.
All around you.
Yeah. So candles are part of my fragrance routine, you know.
I know you're so engaged with the environment and environmental issues, and you've taken that right through to your beauty brand. Does that also apply to the food you eat?
Yeah, well, you know, funny enough, I jump in and out of veganism a lot. I've tried very hard to do it, but, you know, no one's perfect. So I'm vegetarian, vegan, and I do eat bivalves still. Bivalves and cheese are the two things that I find a hard time not having. And I also tend to eat a lot of sugar when I'm vegan, which is, you know, when you have protein, sometimes that can help supplement that craving.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think about it. Buying local, supporting restaurants. There's this great restaurant called Native in the Browns in Mayfair. I forget the road that it's on because I still don't know London well enough, where they upcycle or like use the whole part of a food or try and get everything local. Like I think trying to support restaurants that have that
like
local
Silo.
Content. Like Silo.
Yeah.
Especially because all the trips that we've done as UN Goodwill Ambassadors for EFAD, which is the Agricultural Fund, you see how important that is to the communities who need to sell their product locally. They don't have the export mechanisms as these big agro companies do. If local people aren't eating the food, they don't have an industry.
Right.
So it's so important. And the UK has amazing farmland and amazing farmers and amazing produce. I cannot tell you, when I go back to Canada, I miss everything. I miss all of the UK's produce. So being able to support the farmers market, which there's one in every corner in London.
Yeah, there are lots.
So great. Yeah. So that's definitely impacted me. And food waste has impacted me as well. Just knowing the effects of food waste. I think it's important for us to understand food systems and to not abuse them and to also pass that on to our children. Like what happened to parents saying, someone is starving out there? And that's actually an important sentiment because, yeah,
it's
actually
right.
Someone doesn't have food out there. So let's just stop throwing everything away at a restaurant or ordering an obscene amount of food and then not eating it. So those things you carry with you almost in a guilty way, but in a way that I think is important for everyone to understand.
You seem like a person who's in a very good place with herself. I would say you sound like a very sort of, like a centered person. You sound like somebody who knows yourself.
Thanks.
Do you like who you see when you look in the mirror?
I do now, but you know what? I'm happy that you say that because it's definitely been a journey. It's been, who am I now when I started dating Idris? And do I go back to school? And what are my passions? And how do I support these passions? How do I make money, for God's sake? So that feels really good to hear that because it's been probably the good last 5 or 6 years of my life trying to figure out who I am and how to be centered. And I found that through home and community and well-being and supporting things that I care about. So I take that as the biggest compliment.
No, it really comes across. And if you did go back to school, what would you study?
So I was at the point where I was just about to start law school. I'd done my LSAT. I don't want to be a lawyer anymore, but part of me goes, oh, why don't I just finish? But I would actually go back to school now for international development. And I do want to go back. So that's in the cards for sure, especially in the work that we do. It's so important when you're sitting with government and having meetings and lobbying to fully understand
right.
the scope
yeah.
of the problems that they're facing, because I find myself with imposter syndrome going, I need you to give me this much money, but I also need to understand fully why you haven't committed as much as you have to the development of this country. And, you know, I think it would help to have the knowledge.
It was so lovely to talk to you. You're just like a perfect guest. I wish you so much success with Sable
Labs.
Well,
you're a very good host.
Thanks. I wish you so much success with Sable Labs. I think it's really thoughtfully done and done for good reasons. And I wish you every inevitable piece of success you have with it. That's it for this episode. Thank you so much to the wonderful Sabrina Elba for putting her best face forward. Please subscribe and follow Beyond the Bathroom wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please leave a rating and a review. I will leave as many details of the things Sabrina has described in the notes underneath, and I will see you next time. Bye. Insanity Group.